It is McGarry and Kennedy, Brett McGarry alongside Kathy Kennedy, KK, in for Greg Mackling this week. Going to attempt to get you through or into a day where you might have a bit less pep in your step than you were hoping to have this morning.
It is the morning after the night before, Brett. Listen, I predicted a win last night for our Winnipeg Jets, and I stand by my prediction, even though it failed to develop, but you have to be positive, right? So
you're even wearing a shirt
that says positive mind, vibes, and life. I had to reach into the closet for that one this morning.
Yeah. Well, a question of the day yesterday for Mr. Furnace. Don't call them first. You'll see why. Call Mr. Furnace at 204-832-6243. Was CJOB's Kathy Kennedy has proclaimed the Winnipeg Jets will be victorious on Tuesday night. Some are superstitious about this kind of proclamation. What say you? Now, the odds were in your favor. The audience was in your favor. 60% said, I admire KK's confidence and agree with her. And 40% said, shut it, KK.
I wonder how many would say that this morning, Brett. I think it could be a little bit reversed.
Yeah, so we'll have the sounds of the game at 6:35. And man, here's the thing. And I was talking with one of my buddies who's an Avalanche friend, and he went to both games, and he was, of course, you know, beside himself after they lost, the Avalanche lost game one.
Yeah.
And I was asking him, how does he feel about game two? And he was nervous. And I said, look, the Avalanche have to win sooner or later because they played the Jets, what, three times in the regular season and
four,
lost?
I think.
Okay. Was it
and lost every time.
And then they lose the first game.
Yeah.
So the Jets are just not like, it's not like the Winnipeg Jets are the Harlem Globetrotters and the Colorado Avalanche or the Washington Generals. Well, they're not going to beat them every single time they play them.
No.
So the fact that they lost, okay. And yeah, they had some problems in the second period. I saw three goals allowed in the last 5 minutes of the period of the frame. So Kelly Moore is going to join us for a weekly Wednesday Jets chat. I did not see 1 second.
I was just going to ask you, did you stay up and watch at all?
I thought about it. It was because 7 o'clock is kind of, like I said, I've been trying to get to bed by 8 at the latest.
Yeah.
Because one of the reasons is I need to start getting more sleep. The other reason is after 7 o'clock, that's when I start to get snacky. I've already eaten my dinner.
Yeah.
And then I'm now thinking about my second dinner.
Yeah.
Because that typically a snack for me isn't just a snack. It's like, I'm going to have 6 pieces of toast and peanut butter. And I started to think about that. And I just turned off my TV and said, no.
Wow, you're good.
Go to bed. And I went to bed. I think I was in bed and asleep at 7:15. Wow. And I didn't wake up until 2 minutes before my alarm went off. So, of course, the first thing I did was grab my phone, trying to Google Winnipeg Jets, and I saw the score. I'm like, ugh. And then my alarm went off.
Well, you know what? I knew I couldn't stay up for the game because I didn't have a nap yesterday. So I stayed up to watch the anthems, and then I was good. I was like, okay, I'm going to bed. But then here's the problem. I'm lying in bed and I'm thinking, well, I wonder how they're doing. So I keep checking my phone. And, you know, when it was 2-1, it's like, okay, you know, maybe I can get some sleep. And then woke up this morning and boo!
Yeah. But by all accounts, the whiteout party was another full house.
It was. And that was so great to see because, you know, you kind of wondered when it was going to be -5 last night and a little on the cool side, how many people would actually on a Tuesday evening head down to downtown. It was packed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's great.
We love our parties.
So, yeah, we can just breathe for a moment now. The Jets back in action Friday.
Yep.
So we've got a couple of Jets things this morning. As mentioned, we've got Kelly Moore at 8:35. We've got the Paul Edmonds Wednesday Jets report at 7:55. We also have the sounds of the game. We'll do that at 6:37. And we still have the playoff payoff. The code word, the next code word is coming
after
7:15. 65-inch TV from Visions Electronics up for grabs. So wait for your cue on that one. Also today at 9:05, and I highlight this because I just want to throw out the caveat that I had nothing to do with this booking. As a proud I grew up in Transcona, proud Transconian, but I swear I did not book this.
Uh-huh. Listen, we're going to tell you about one of the most unique fundraisers that I have ever stumbled across. And the fact that it has something to do with Transcona, that's just a bonus, Brett. I mean, so we'll give you all the information about that coming up, as you say, just after 9.
And then at 7:05, we're going, and I'm going to be honest, I'm surprised that this is going to be an in-studio guest.
I know, right?
Given what we're going to be discussing at 7:05.
We're going to talk marijuana. And those who like to grow plants at home, the feds say it's okay. Manitoba has said no way. But there could be a change. And we're going to talk to one gentleman who has been fighting with the province for years now about this and, you know, find out how happy he is, because it looks like there will be a legalized change.
Yeah, I think this is great. I mean, look, I cannabis is not my thing, but this always seemed like a dumb rule. If we're going to legalize the product, why put up this particular impediment? I didn't get it.
Well, and I mean, we are one of only two provinces that put up that impediment. So, yeah. You know, I'm with you. Let's just open the door and let it go. Let it go.
All right. And we also want to give you a heads up at 7:35, 680 CJOB's executive producer and special on-air contributor, Loren McNabb, has put together it's a really difficult piece about online child exploitation rates. They've tripled. So she spent some time with the RCMP's ICE unit to learn what they're doing to try to stop this trend. It is McGarry and Kennedy. Mackling's off this week. Brett McGarry with Kathy Kennedy. We've got the sounds of the game coming up.
We do indeed.
We got to do it, win or lose. And I am curious to know a bit more about the story, because I did not stay up to watch or listen to this game. With the 8:30 start, I just said, nope, not doing it. I'm not tempting myself to watch even one period, because then that becomes two, and then
exactly. It's
almost midnight, and I'm hating myself. So before we get to those sounds, though, KK, we had someone in studio earlier this week, which was a real treat for me as someone who had never met this man.
Well, legendary broadcaster and Jets 1.0 play-by-play announcer Kurt Kielbeck joined us in studio. And Kurt is such a gentleman. And, you know, just I love just sitting and listening to his voice.
What a voice.
Right? So it was great to have him in studio and just talk about the Winnipeg Jets 2.0. But one of the things we talked about, Brett, was that he had written a book during the pandemic. And it's called 2 Minutes for Talking to Myself. So he said, you know, he's got all these boxes of books at home, right? And he didn't know what to do with them. And, you know, he said, if anybody wants one, you know, reach out and we'll get you a copy. And tens of hundreds of people texted us, Brett, and said, hey, we want a copy of the book. So, Kurt said, all right, here's what we're going to do. He is going to be at St. Vitale Park on Saturday afternoon between 2 and 4.
Oh.
And he's going to be near the Duck Pond, okay? Between 2 and 4 on Saturday. You can come by for a chat to talk hockey and pick up a copy of his book, and he'll sign it, obviously. So, like you said, it's going to be a cool day, but you know what? That's perfect hockey talk weather.
Yep.
Drop by the Duck Pond, St. Vitale Park, between 2 and 4 this Saturday. You can meet Kurt Kielbeck, pick up a copy of his book. I'm not sure how much they are, but, you know, it's not going to be $100. And he'll sign it for you, and you guys can talk hockey with the man, the myth, the legend. I mean, he's an incredible man.
That's super. That's
great
that there was that kind of enthusiasm, because, yeah, he was saying he didn't quite understand how distribution worked. He thought he was in charge of that, so he bought all these books. And to some level, he was in charge of that. But then for in other avenues, like the certain stores or bigger stores, they go through their people to get copies of his
exactly.
books. So he bought all these books that have just been sitting there now. So they are about to find new life.
Indeed. Saturday afternoon.
All right. So that's good news. Bad news. Didn't go so well for the Jets last night. So, producer Jeff Forte, let's bring you the sounds of the game.
Habs are looking to wrestle away home ice advantage and send the series back home for them. Tied at one. Puck is dropped, and it's showtime from downtown Winnipeg. Dylan holds it. Dylan shoots, deflected in front. Aya follows there. Rebound. They score! David Gustafson with his first ever Stanley Cup playoff goal, and Winnipeg opens up the scoring. 3:15 into this baby, and it's 1-0 for the Jets.
Exactly the start the Winnipeg Jets were looking for.
They won the faceoff battle in game one, 55-45, but they've lost a lot of defensive zone faceoffs, and right off the faceoff, Miles Wood shoots and scores. And Hellebuck didn't expect that, and we are tied at one. Here's McKinnon. McKinnon on the far side. Broken up by Winnipeg, but Colton comes in, steals the puck, shoots it, and stopped by Hellebuck. And it's outletted again to the far side. Here comes Velarde, right down Main Street. Back door on the far side. They score! Mark Scheifele got one hand on it. Redirected that Velarde pass to the front of the net. Put it to the top of the goal. And it's 2-1 Winnipeg. And now the other way, here comes Colorado to the near side, trying to get it back out in front, going to where the goal was, Nichushkin, but on the back track was Niederreiter, dives out and knocks it into where the corner. Benson then gave it away for Connor. Connor, right down Main Street, shoots, he hit the post, rebound on the backhand by Velarde, and it's stopped by Georgiev. High slot, drops it for Taves, now from a car, shoots, scores! Letkinen deflected it in front, it goes to the top of the net, and we're tied at 2. Letkinen then scraped it away from Nikolai Ehlers on his wallet. Lead pass now, a breakaway. Manson out of the penalty box, shoots and scores! With 7 seconds remaining in this second period, Josh Manson comes out of the penalty box as he and Velarde's penalty expire at the same time, and McKinnon puts it right on his stick. He walks in on a breakaway, goes 5-hole along the ice on Hellebuck, and it's 4-2 Colorado.
And it finished 5-2. Colorado in game two. So the series is tied at one.
It's okay, Brett. It's okay.
It is.
We'll give them one. Okay, one and we're done.
I mean, the Jets are good on the road.
Yes.
And no one, as Cam Poitras was saying in sports, nobody expected this to be a sweep because the Jets, yeah, they swept the regular season series 3-0 and then they win game one. So that's 4 in a row over the Avalanche. We knew that the Colorado Avalanche, who are a recent Stanley Cup champion, were not going to lay down and die.
No.
And they're the highest offensive output in the regular season was that team. So we knew the Jets are going to lose at least one of these games.
And listen, all these people who are texting this morning saying I jinxed it, I did not. You watch.
I don't believe in that stuff.
You know what? Neither do I.
Yeah. I will admit that there is, it's hard not to sometimes get caught up in that because there have been times where I've turned on a game, doesn't matter what game, but the team that I'm rooting for is doing well before I turn it on.
Yeah.
And then I turn on the game and bad things start to happen. And you kind of wonder, like, is this somehow my fault?
I know.
Did I tip the universal scale against the team I'm rooting for?
Yeah. It's funny because the same with me. I'll be watching a Jet game and, the other team will score. So I'll go into the kitchen and start doing the dishes and then the Jets will come back and score.
While you're doing the dishes?
Yes.
Uh-oh.
So, unless we have a very comfortable lead, I'll be in the kitchen doing a lot of dishes. I'm not superstitious, really. I'm not.
It is McGarry and Kennedy this week. Brett McGarry with KK, Kathy Kennedy. One more Jets note, forgot to mention this in the last segment during the sounds of the game. Pat McAfee, a couple of days ago, was going on about our loud barn. Couldn't identify where Winnipeg was on a map, but he couldn't believe how crazy our barn was. And yesterday he was once again espousing the virtues of Winnipeg. And even at one point during his chat with PK Subban, he put on a Jets jersey, which had his name on it. So that's pretty cool. So he's all about Winnipeg. So in the meantime, let's put the Jets aside.
Yeah.
And KK, we want to talk about shopping.
Indeed. Because Winnipeggers love a deal. And, you know, listen, the price of everything, including clothes, has been on the rise. And as a result, many people are looking to secondhand stores to find their fashion. Plus, of course, it is a green thing to do. And it stops the fast fashion trend that we have been on for so long. So it got me thinking this morning about, you know, finds at secondhand stores or even at garage sales, right? And I have to say, the amount of purses I have found. Sarah, can you relate?
There's some good ones out there secondhand, yes.
A leather Roots purse, mm-hmm. you know, for $7. Come on.
Wow.
So, yeah, I'm all about finding these deals at secondhand stores or even garage sales. I found some interesting things. You, Brett's got a great story, but what about you, Cam? Have you found anything?
Yeah, every now and then I'll go and look. I like the idea of thrift shopping, but then I go to a thrift store and there's just the endless racks and racks of clothes, and I have to go through each one of those individually, and I go in excited and I get very tired and very bored very quickly. So usually I either just leave with nothing or I'll grab something if I think I need it. The person you got to talk to about thrifting is my wife. She loves it. Her mom, she used to do it with her grandma, and they would go out every weekend and they would find all kinds of great deals and all kinds of great stuff. So she's the one that should be on talking about thrift shopping because she's the ultimate thrifter.
What about you, Sarah?
Love it. I feel like you have to go in the mindset when you're going into thrift, like, I'm going to be here. I'm going to go through stuff.
I just go,
you're such a boy, Poitras. You're such a boy.
Because I found like a great like dress coat at like thrift stores, this like gray dress coat. But I think my favorite find was back when one of my first garage sales just down the street, our neighbors were having one and just my family went over just to chat and have fun. And I think I went with like $10. My mom said I could spend, and there was like this Rubbermaid bin of like 20 Barbies for like $5, and some of them questionable, some of them had their hair chopped off a little bit, but most of them were gems for like $5-$10, so that's my favorite.
That's
find.
A find. Speaking of bucks, Brett.
Yeah, my story, and Jeff will get to yours in a moment here, but mine, I don't do a lot of shopping anymore. I can't be bothered. I'm kind of with Cam on this one. But secondhand shopping, generally don't do it. But I needed some pants for golf because I had a golf round coming up and I knew it was going to be cold. I know. And it was at a time, it was early in the season and it was cold and I didn't have pants for golf because all the pants that I owned were either too big or too small. And I wasn't about to go pay for golf pants because they're like over $100. And so I thought I'll go to Value Village and see if they've got a pair of pants that fits that could work on a golf course. And I found a pair that was like, I don't know, $10. But there, when I tried them on, I reached into the pocket and found $30.
Woo!
So
winner chicken dinner.
So I was paid $20 essentially to take these pants home.
And I'm looking at Cam, looking at you going, "Ooh, hang on."
Somebody's going to be going through thrift store pockets later this afternoon.
What about you, Jeff?
Okay, yeah, I don't go out much for shopping thrift stores or garage sales anymore. When I was a kid, like Sarah, like my mom would give me a little bit of money, go to garage sales. And I remember at one garage sale, I found a stereo. And like this thing was old as heck. Like, no, it had a record player on the top, didn't work. Had an 8-track player, but you know, it had a radio. But I ended up bringing this stereo home. My parents were like, what are you going to do with that? Well, you know, I didn't use it much. My dad actually took it, put it in the garage, and it stayed there for like 20 years. And then I moved out, and then he took my stereo from my room. But
I thought you were going to say, you know, I waited 20 years, and I resold it and made like $500. Like,
oh, no, that thing's in the landfill now. That thing's gone.
Aww. But you know what? It is a real movement, you guys, to stop the fast fashion
trend. It should, and it should be. You know, like I think it's great. And there's so much great stuff out there that people, you know, one man's trash is another man's treasure. It's very true.
Yep.
Well, one of our colleagues down the hall at Power 97, her name is Lex. She does weekends on Power 97 and fills in sometimes during the week. And she, on her social media, will often post about the stuff that she finds. And she'll go find some beat up old pair of boots and she'll scrub them down and like paint them. I don't know what kind of paint she's using, but they come out looking like brand new, completely different from what they looked like before. So like, yeah, if you're crafty.
Yeah, I admire people like that who can really repurpose. I can't do that, but I admire people who can.
I can't either. The only repurposing I'll find is this pair of shoes is too old and beat up. I'm going to repurpose it into the form of trash.
Yes.
So 204-780-6868 for a chance to win some tickets for the Winnipeg Tattoo Show coming up May 10th to the 12th at the Convention Center. Your secondhand shopping victories. We'll pick a winner at 9:15. It is McGarry and Kennedy. Brett McGarry, Kathy Kennedy, and for Greg Mackling this week. The next playoff payoff code word is coming in our next segment for a chance to qualify to win a 65-inch Sony 4K TV from Visions Electronics. But right now we want to get right into this with our studio guest because back in 2018, the federal government legalized homegrown pot with a cap at 4 plants per household. However, Manitoba's former PC government did not acknowledge that and in fact said there would be an outright ban.
Joining us this morning is Jesse Lavoie. He has spent years challenging that current law in court. Good morning, Jesse. Thank you for coming in.
Thank you so much for having me.
Why was this fight so important to you? I mean, other than the obvious, you wanted to grow plants at home.
Well, that's definitely the obvious, but back in 2018 when I saw the ban go into place, I did some research into the reasoning behind it. And their reasoning was all debunked 20 years ago when federal medical growing for medical purposes was legalized. So it was very bullish, outdated arguments, and I wanted to do something about it.
So they said that the previous government said a ban was needed to protect the health and safety of kids. You know, think of the children. What about the children? Plus, it would be hard to police. So what do you say to that?
So all of those were debunked in the Supreme Court when federal government legalized medical growing. So tents can have locks on them, so you can both lock the door to the room and the tent so the children can't get into there. You can't put any locks when you're brewing beer or making wine at home. Kids can drink that. That's immediate toxic. And then with it going into the black market, there's no cartels that are going to start with 4 plants. You know, average people can get 40 grams their first harvest and go up from there. You're not going to start a criminal chain with that.
But what would you say to somebody who says, okay, it starts with 4 and then, oh, it's 8 and then it's 12. There are concerns that if we start with 4, does it lead to something bigger down the road?
Well, the federal law allows for 4 and that's what we've been fighting for 4 years. So if someone wants to go beyond that, they technically are breaking the law and that's not what we're fighting for.
Go ahead.
When it comes to this recreational plant stuff, so if you can go to a store and buy it, what would you say to someone who says, well, what's the big deal if you can't do it at home?
Well, there's a whole community around it. You know, you're allowed to gift 30 grams or less to an adult here in Canada. So there's, you know, when people make wine or beer at home, they like to gift it to their friends. They like that community. You know, what can I do better on my next harvest to make it the yields better or the potency stronger? There's that whole community around it. And if the federal government allows it, provincial government should also allow it. So that's the bottom line.
I never thought about that, gifting marijuana.
Yeah.
Wow. Who knew?
Yes.
So the current NDP government, Jesse, has said that they are going to look at making legislative changes as early as this week. In fact, maybe even today, which would lift the ban. So do you believe it's actually going to happen?
Yes. We've had lots of communication with the NDP, and we've heard from a lot of sources that the plan is to introduce a bill this week that would allow for the sale of seeds and the growing for recreational purposes. What would happen after that is Toba Grown, as the instigator and aggressor of the lawsuit, we will file what's called an adjournment, and that will put the lawsuit on pause. So that will give time for the bill to pass, and that way both sides can stop spending legal bills and we won't have to go to court this spring.
You've spent a lot of money.
Yes, it's been a very expensive endeavor.
Why? I mean, just for the ability to grow four plants, you have been willing to dig deep into your pocket. I mean, obviously this is very important to you.
Yes, it's been extremely important, and it's a very long road to challenge a constitutional law. You have to obviously retain a law firm who has to do a bunch of research. You have to file applications, briefs, responses, affidavits. We had to go to court twice. And now we've prepared for the appeal, and hopefully we don't have to go through with that.
How big is the Toba Grown community that you're a part of?
Well, we're doing this for all Manitobans, especially the Manitoba cannabis community. We do have about 5,000 followers on Instagram, and you know our followers are really, really active and love supporting what we're doing.
You mentioned seeds. So how would this work? I mean, all right, we have the ability to grow four plants at home, but obviously you need seeds to make that happen. So would they sell those seeds in a legalized marijuana store?
That's correct. So in other provinces where you can buy your finished packaged goods of cannabis flower or extracts, etc., they sell seeds. So you'll be able to buy, you know, packs of four or whichever number it would be, and then you're allowed to grow four plants at a time.
How expensive is it to grow those four plants?
Well, with LED lighting, the electrical bills aren't what they used to be, and the fans you would use are also very low on electrical costs. And usually seeds are about $20 to $40 for four seeds.
Really?
So, yeah, so it's actually once you have the equipment, it's really inexpensive.
But still, I'm sorry, $20 to $40 for four seeds. I'm thinking about, you know, buying a package of seeds for flowers that are $1.29 at, like, you know.
Well, let's say you pull off easy math, 40 grams your first harvest, $10 a gram, that's $400. If you're spending $40 on seeds,
yeah. Okay.
you're getting that whole enjoyment.
Is there a possible fallout for the cannabis stores in terms of people who are currently buying their product are now growing their product? So could there be a sort of domino effect in terms of it hurting the business, or would we just be replacing, okay, I'm not spending $20 on the cannabis, I'm spending $20 on the seeds?
Well, what's great about our lawsuit is we have data from all the other provinces who have allowed this since 2018, and sales have continued to grow. In fact, you know, when you buy your seeds, you can also buy the flower that you're growing at the same time. And when we look at beer or wine sales, those continue to grow as well, even though for a long time you've been able to make it at home.
That's a great question, Brett, because, you know, so many, we have so many stores now. There seems to be one on every corner.
Yeah.
And so many now are actually going out of business because there is such a plethora of marijuana stores, at least in this city. I'm not sure what it's like across the country. So have they expressed any concerns to you about your fight?
Actually, our biggest group of supporters have been the dispensaries. They really want to see this law change. Like, for them, it's more revenue avenues. They can sell seeds, grow equipment, classes, etc.
Jesse Lavoie with Toba Grown. It's been a long, hard fight for you, sir, but maybe things are about to change for the better for you.
Thank you both for having me on. It's been a pleasure.
We appreciate you coming down, and we may hear something, Brett, later today from the province.
Fingers crossed.
It is McGarry and Kennedy, Brett McGarry with Kathy Kennedy, in for Greg Mackling this week. And in a moment, we have a really serious, disturbing story that we must share with you from Loren McNabb. But before that, we must announce our latest qualifier for the playoff payoff. KK, the code word was net. He had 30 seconds basically to send it in and be texter number 10. And who was that today?
Our winner was Raina Graves. She is our next qualifier for a chance to win a 65-inch Sony 4K TV from Visions Electronics. The next chance to qualify is on Connecting Winnipeg with Hal.
And coming up a bit later on this half hour at 7:55, we have Paul Edmonds with the Wednesday Jets report following the Jets 5-2 loss to Colorado last night. Online child exploitation rates have more than tripled in Canada over the last 10 years. That's from 2014 to 2022. Recent numbers from Statistics Canada show leading the way in that category, child pornography.
And Brett, while it is a disturbing stat, police forces right across the globe are trying to do what they can to get offenders off the internet and out of your neighborhood. This week, 680 CJOB's executive producer and on-air contributor, Loren McNabb, got a behind-the-scenes look of the RCMP unit tasked with getting these predators off the street.
You know, you can see I've got some plants and things like that.
It has all the hallmarks.
I have a happy light.
Of an ordinary office. Gray paint, cubicles, family photos on the wall.
There's a number of computers here that that I utilize to...
But in this office, for our visit, almost all the computer screens are dark.
There's also a system that we monitor as well for individuals who are downloading and uploading child pornography. So that's...
The material too sensitive and in some cases too disturbing to show.
You know, some of the data that we are viewing and analyzing, it is horrific. It's the imagery, it's not easy to digest.
This is the RCMP's Internet Child Exploitation Unit, or ICE for short, and Constable Issa Meehan.
You know, you see the results of the hard work that our unit puts in.
Constable Kieran Deep Hira.
To me, it's important to help children who are...
And Constable Grant Cummin weren't assigned to ICE. Each of them chose to walk through its doors.
I have children and small children, and, you know, I weighed the pros and cons, but I thought at the end of the day it was more important that I was out there trying to make a difference and apprehending the people that were trying to harm the children than trying to bury my head in the sand.
That choice isn't easy. ICE's role is to investigate crimes that include child pornography, luring, sextortion. Before officers can even start here, they're put through a series of tests to literally see if they can stomach the job.
We are exposed, it's called gentle exposure, to some of the material that we are obviously going to be looking at categorizing in the future. And, you know, if you turn green and start throwing up all over the place, obviously this isn't something that's probably built for you. But
it can be challenging, at times exhausting.
We are inundated with files coming through detachments and social media applications that...
Constable Hira says the ICE unit sees new cases almost daily. Calls from victims of sextortion. Social media companies alerting them to the possible posting of illegal images. Asks from other police agencies trying to track down suspects or victims.
We do see cases where the offender is known to the victim, so if it's a parent or a teacher or something like that. But we also have seen a huge increase in investigations where the offender is unknown to the victim, so they're online. And that's a huge part to this generation feeling that they're invincible online. So stranger danger no longer exists in the sense of...
Social media hasn't helped. Neither has the proliferation of smartphones.
You have lots of kids who are online learning, so they're spending a lot more time on digital technologies. Their textbooks are online, their classes are online. But also we're seeing a lot of kids who are getting access to their own cell phones at younger ages. Like we have kids who are 6 or 7 years old who have full cell phones with full data packages. So when...
Each officer in the ICE unit spends time trying to speak to kids and parents and schools to prevent that worst-case scenario. But the numbers show crimes like sextortion are on the rise. And it can start with something as simple as your child playing an innocent game.
Centering pass, great glove save.
While you're busy playing hockey with your friend, you can be chirping them over your headset.
In the ICE unit, they have a PlayStation for officers to try and get an understanding of how predators are tracking kids down, how they can then hunt those predators down. On the day of our visit, NHL, the video game version, is on the big screen.
Like, this is not a game I would have been worried about for my kid. Is it just the chat function?
It's the chat function, right? The game itself is wonderful, right?
Whether it's Discord, Roblox, PS, PlayStation systems, Xbox systems, and then saying, hey, let's talk privately. And that includes Snapchat and Instagram usually. And that's where sort of the sextortion or extortion takes place.
Sextortion is someone on the other end coercing kids and teens to send sexually explicit photos or videos online. Constable Meehan says there's no commonality with predators that come from all over, except most are practiced at what they do.
It's sort of organized and it's almost scripted. So these individuals, these perpetrators, they know how to speak the language that kids are speaking.
So it's like the scam calls I might get, but for sextortion.
Absolutely.
On top of an increase in sextortion, the ICE unit says it's also seen a rise in self-exploitation.
We're seeing a lot of kids as young as 6 or 7 years old who are making videos on TikTok where they're dancing and then they pull their pants down, exposing their vagina or their penis, or lifting their top and exposing their breast, stuff like that. So that's kind of the self-exploitation where the child has made the video of themselves exposing.
Most are doing it to be silly. And with self-exploitation cases, ICE officers simply work to track the kids and their families down and then talk to them to warn them of potential dangers.
They could be communicating with somebody and that individual, that perpetrator may say, pull down your pants or lift up your top. And their child, they don't know what's going on. And a screen capture is obtained. Once that screen capture...
It can be hard to wrap your head around as a parent, as a police officer. The three we spoke to have been in the ICE unit for 3 years, helping victims, tracking perpetrators.
When we get their devices, we'll find, sometimes thousands, sometimes tens of thousands, sometimes hundreds of thousands of images. That's mind-blowing. That said, sometimes
it's why they're encouraged to walk away from the work if they need to, go exercise, speak to therapists. Officers in this room have looked at images most of us couldn't bear to see, interrogated criminals most of us couldn't stand to be in the same room with.
What are you feeling in that moment when you get them?
You have to put your personal feelings aside and bury them deep, because this isn't the person that you want to be sitting down having coffee with.
Just this month, they brought three kids to safety after arresting four men in southern Manitoba for possessing and sharing child pornography. One man was also charged with making it.
We are hunting these people, and we are invested in finding these people who are trying to hurt children. So once we get there, it's like, okay, deep breath, and away we go.
Despite the darkness of their job, each officer used the exact same word to express the meaning of their work.
The work is so rewarding.
And it is. It is very rewarding.
It renews your faith in what we're doing.
And it's in that reward, in the gray walls of this office, they find the strength to carry on.
Thank you very much to 680 CJOB's Loren McNabb, executive producer and special on-air contributor, for bringing us another one of these so important stories. And it's just, it's another example of, good gosh, how things have changed from when we were kids.
You know, we often say, those who are of a certain age, myself included, about how we were able to grow up in what I call the golden times, the 70s, the 80s, even the beginning part of the 90s, where, you didn't have to worry about the internet. You didn't have to worry about smartphones, right? I mean, not to say that there weren't threats out there in other forms, but you feel, I feel for parents and for kids today. It is a scary time out there.
It's McGarry and Kennedy. Mackling is off this week. Last chance. We've got tickets for the Winnipeg Tattoo Show coming to the Convention Center May 10th to the 12th. We're asking you about your secondhand shopping victory, like Sean, who says, I was given a set of cufflinks and a tie clip from my father when I was 16. They were his father's. Many years later, unfortunately, I got divorced and she kept those.
Ooh.
And my father passed away 5 years after the divorce. Approximately 10 years later, I was at a garage sale in Riverton on my way home from Hecla. And there they were.
No.
Still in the case my father gave me. I obviously didn't argue the price, as they were priceless to me. I gave them to my son at his graduation last year. Definitely my biggest win of any kind.
That's incredible.
I didn't read that story in complete ahead of going on the air. And I'm getting emotional reading that, Sean. That's awesome. So that's a great story. So keep those coming. We're going to pick a winner in our next segment.
Brett, we hear and talk about fundraisers all the time in this city and in this province. But this one, I got to tell you, it caught our eye for its uniqueness.
Indeed, the Transcona Museum is holding a rain barrel fundraiser. So joining us this morning to tell us exactly what a rain barrel fundraiser is Alana Horeda, museum curator. Good morning, Alana.
Good morning.
So first of all, yay Transcona, proud Transconian. but let's start with the Transcona Museum. For anybody who is unfamiliar with this marvelous facility, tell us about the museum.
Well, the museum, we're situated in the downtown heart of Transcona, and we're telling and sharing the community history and the stories of Transcona.
All right. So where did the idea of a rain barrel fundraiser come from? I mean, look, you know, we have 50-50 draws, we have silent auctions, we have, you know, fundraising nights, but where does a rain barrel fundraiser come from?
This is actually our fourth one that we've done. And a number of years ago, I purchased a rain barrel from a different organization holding a rain barrel sale and was like, this is something we could do. We could do this here at the museum. So I looked into it because we partner with rainbarrel.ca and they have fundraisers going on all across Canada, basically. So we were like, yeah, you know what? I think we can do this. I think we can sell some rain barrels. So yeah, this is our fourth one.
Okay, now forgive my ignorance on this, but I'm going to subscribe to the there's no such thing as a stupid question on this one. What does a rain barrel do?
Well, a rain barrel, it collects like rainwater from your gutters or from your downspouts, and then you can use that to water your garden, water your flowers. It's free water, basically, so you don't have to pay to use water from your house, and it's, you know, it helps keep water out of the sewer system during like heavy rains and stuff like that. It helps keep rain away from your foundation. So it's like good all around.
All right. But if you purchase a rain barrel, a fundraising rain barrel, what do you get?
So the rain barrels start at $60, and that gets you a 55-gallon food grade recycled rain barrel. The barrels are recycled food grade containers, and it comes with a mosquito net and a leaf basket because you need that. You get a spigot at the bottom so you can, you know, turn it on and off. You get an overflow hose and an overflow adapter, and with that adapter you can link numerous barrels together. So yeah, you get a lot.
The mosquito net filter, I want to ask you about that because one of the things that we always hear is make sure you don't have any standing water in your yard in mosquito season. So how does this filter work? Does it allow you to hold on to that water without releasing the mosquitoes into the wilderness?
Yeah. So it's a fine mesh basket that sits at the top of most of the rain barrels come with them. And so the way I have it set up at my house, my downspout, I've got it just going into the top of my barrel through that basket. So it's collecting any leaves or anything like that. But the mosquitoes can't get in and lay your eggs. So there's no issues with, you know, creating a acceptable environment for mosquitoes in your rain barrel as long as you've got that mesh basket in there. You're good to go.
So obviously funds raised from this go to the museum, but is there a specific program or an item that the funds are going to be used for?
We're using the funds to help offset our operating costs because, as you know, things are getting more expensive. And so we're doing that so we can continue to offer the things that we do here at the museum. So they're going to our ongoing operating costs.
And the museum is sort of representative. Like I came on and said, yeah, Transcona. And I'm not saying that Transconians are more proud than other neighborhoods, but as a Transconian, I am intimately familiar with how proud many Transconians are of that neighborhood. So, you know, do you get that sense when people visit the museum that there's a pride in the heritage?
Definitely. We're not a large tourist destination, our little museum. So most of our visitors are people from Transcona, or they've brought family who've come to visit to see the museum. So, yeah, we have a lot of people who are very proud of this community, and they're proud of the museum and what we're able to do for our community.
And the clock is ticking when it comes to getting these rain barrels, Alana. So how many days left do people have to or have the ability to purchase one of these?
Yes, all orders need to be placed by April 30th. So that's, what, 6 days from today? And then they're going to load up our truck because all the barrels are in Ontario. And then you're going to come to the museum on May 10th to actually pick up your barrel.
May 10th, 3 to 8 p.m., Transcona Museum, 141 Regent Avenue West in downtown Transcona. Alana Horeda is museum creator or curator with the Transcona Museum. Alana, this was a pleasure. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
And the website is rainbarrel.ca/Transcona. And if you want to get them, they start at $60.
Very cool idea for a fundraiser.
Yeah.
I think.
I know.
That's never mind thinking outside the box. That's thinking outside the barrel.
It's McGarry and Kennedy this week. Kathy Kennedy in for Greg Mackling. We're asking you for a chance to win tickets for the Winnipeg Tattoo Show about your secondhand shopping victories. One of our runners up this morning, KK, is Richard.
Yeah, and I love this story, Brett, because this is something that I've actually done before. Richard says, good morning. My thrift store success is actually a cumulative project. There you go. I've been working on for about 7 years. He said he joked one day with his mom that he was going to go to thrift stores and buy back all of my old toys that she sold at a garage sale 30 years ago for a quarter each. Well, over the years, I now have a collection of LJN and Hasbro WWF action figures.
Yeah.
DC comic superheroes, Muppet Babies from the 1980s, McDonald's Happy Meals, and California Raisins, just to name a few. I love this. Always fun to find a new treasure at a thrift store. I sent a picture to my mom and said, hey, remember this? Lots of fun and always a trip down memory lane.
That's super, Richard. Way to go. I still regret. My mom didn't force me to, but very strongly encouraged me to sell all of my toys. It was like a community garage sale.
Yep.
We had it at a hockey rink at Park City West. So I had this table in the rink on a summer day, and I sold all my Transformers and all my Star Wars stuff and all my G.I. Joe stuff.
Yeah, all my Star Wars stuff gone too. If we would have hung on, Brad.
I know. I mean, it wasn't worth, not because it would have been worth something, but I like
no, heck no. It would have been worth a lot of money, Brett. Well, you and I could have slept in this morning, McGarry. That's all I'm telling you right now.
Al, another runner up here, who says a couple of years ago, I got married at the Forks. And Al's story is funny because he didn't end up getting anything, but he got married at the Forks. It was very small, just me, my wife, and my daughter, because this was both our second marriage. So the morning of the wedding, she was at the inn at the Forks getting ready. I was at home. When it was time for me to make my way, I'm driving through Southdale on a Saturday afternoon, and there it was, a garage sale full of used power tools. I had to stop and check things out. The garage sale hosts were nice enough to take pictures of me in my wedding suit.
Oh,
browsing all the merchandise. I didn't buy anything, but it made for great pictures. And Al says, hey, boys will be boys. But our winner, it's just because we were so astounded at this find. Our winner, KK, is John Rondo.
Yeah, and he happened to get on the first free giveaway weekend. He got a Bang & Olufsen A9 speaker. Now, for those of you who don't know your speakers, I suggest you Google, because that's what Brett and I did, and it is absolutely unbelievable. John says, my wife thought it was a speaker. I thought it was a cooktop as it was laying on its back. It still works perfectly, says John. It didn't come with a remote, though. I know, Brett, you had asked him, hey, did you buy one? And he said, it's too expensive. You got it for free, John. Go and buy the remote. It's a win.
Yeah, like we surmise that what happened here is whoever put it out for the giveaway weekend didn't realize, because it doesn't look like a speaker at first glance. It looks like just some kind of weird, it's just this big circle on three posts, on three legs. So it looks like it could be art. It looks like it could be maybe furniture. But it's a $5,500 speaker. Holy smokes, John. So there you go. That's incredible. I've never, ever heard a story like that.
No.
You win the tattoo show tickets. Right now, we just want to get right into this with our next guest. He's an award-winning author. He's a great friend of this radio station. He's one of the nicest guys you'll ever meet. And he's got another new book out. This man pumps out books like he's a factory. It's called The Kodiaks. His name is David A. Robertson. David, good morning to you, sir.
Good morning. How's it going?
Doing great, man. Thanks for joining us. Always exciting to talk to you, and especially with what happened this week. So before we get to the book, something quite special happened to you for you in this past week, a little belated as well.
Oh, yeah. No, thank you. Well, with the pandemic, we didn't get to do the Governor General celebrations for the last several years. And I got to go to Ottawa and finally collect the Governor General's Award for On the Trap Line, which I'd won in 2021. And it was just a really great gathering of the literary community. We had 4 years of winners who got to go and collect their awards. And it was just a really nice day. And it was a nice day to remember my dad, because that book was really dedicated to my father. So
congratulations once again, David. I mean, that must have been a head-shaking moment, though, you know, to pour that kind of effort and to do such a tribute for your father and then to be getting that award. Incredible.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it was kind of like a moment where when we found out that we had won, Julie and I, Julie's the illustrator, Julie Flett, we just kind of just like bawled for about an hour together. Aww. On the phone. And we, cause her dad actually passed away a week before my dad. And we, by the time the book came out, they had both passed away, and, that book meant a lot to us. And the award for it, that book, I mean, it didn't really change how much it means to us, but it definitely was, I felt like another way to honor dad and just the way in which, that story, you know, paid tribute to both of our fathers. It was a really special moment, really special book.
And just curious, before we move on to the new book, you know, you've won a lot of awards, and too many to list. We actually did list them once on the air, and it took like 3 minutes to get through the resume of awards. So I know this is a big one, but do you ever, I don't know if expect or is the right word, but like if you don't win an award for something you do, do you ever feel like, well, what's going on here, people?
Oh, no, never. You know, I there's so many great books that are published every year. There's so many books that are deserving of awards that don't win awards. It's so subjective. You know, and that's not to say a book that wins isn't a great book. But it's the jury you get. It's the timing. I never write a book expecting to win or even thinking to win an award. It's just such a great honor and such a great surprise every single time. And, you know, I've lost way more than I've won. And I'm just as happy to be nominated every time as I am to win. So it's always just like a huge surprise, and it always means a lot. But the book itself and the process and putting it out there into the world is what's really special.
I think you just proved a point because Brett was raving about you just before we had you on, David, and just saying what a nice and humble guy you are. And that's exactly how you sound.
Nobody more humble than me.
Let's talk about your latest book, The Kodiaks. It is now out. What is it all about?
Yeah, The Kodiaks is actually my first sports book. It's a hockey book, which is apropos of like the time we're in right now with the Jets in the hockey playoffs. And it's just a book where I was inspired to write it, like, I think about, you know, 10 years ago almost. My son was playing in like 9A1 hockey. Back then, the levels were a bit different. And they went on this like really exciting, really like this roller coaster playoff run, where they lost their first game. It was a double knockout. So they had to win, I think, like 8 games in a row to get back to the city championship. And they ended up doing it. And I swear every game they won by like in overtime or by one goal. And it was the most fun I've had watching hockey. And I remember when it was over, I thought, I want to write about this in a book. This would be such a cool book to write. And but for me, like when I write a book, I have to always have as well something to say with the literature. So I couldn't think of the angle at the time. So I just shelved it for a little bit. And then a few years ago, I decided that I figured out how I wanted to approach it. And it's just a book about this kid named Alex who moves down from Norway House into Winnipeg. And that's my home community, Norway House. And he has to adapt to living in the city. He has to adapt to playing on a new team. And he also has to deal with a lot of, you know, discrimination and racist attitudes that are, you know, thrown at him as, you know, an Indigenous kid playing in a predominantly white sport. And so it's a book about, you know, hockey and the love of hockey and the great things about hockey culture, but also it's about some of the difficulties of hockey culture. And I don't think, you know, we can really deal with those things unless we address them head on. And that's what this book tries to do.
Yeah, like there's an excerpt here at PortageAndMainPress.com. 11-year-old Alex is a natural on the ice, but can he stand proud when he's judged for who he is and where he comes from? So is this still a situation that young Indigenous players are dealing with in 2024 on the ice?
Unfortunately, yeah. And I think that it also extends beyond just Indigenous hockey players. You know, I remember recently I was talking with an Asian parent who had a kid of hers that was playing hockey and had to deal with the same sort of stuff that, you know, I know that a lot of Native kids playing hockey have to deal with. I think that it also extends to the LGBT community. And so, you know, and everybody should just be able to play the sport and love the sport and not be subjected to that sort of thing to ruin that love, because it is a beautiful sport and it brings out the best in so many ways. And these sorts of things, I think, ruin that experience of what is otherwise a wonderful, like, amazing game. I definitely think it's something that my son's even dealt with recently, playing down in Texas. You know, the attitudes down there are a bit different, obviously, but, you know, it's something that he's seen firsthand. It's something that I've seen with a lot of Indigenous hockey players firsthand. And obviously it's not acceptable, but we also have to know how to deal with it when it happens. And we have to equip our kids to be able to deal with it. But as parents, we also have to know how to deal with it also.
David, I'm interested in the creative process because, you know, as Brett said, you have put out so many books in your lifetime. How does that happen? Tell me about where a book idea comes from and how you bring it to life.
Well, it's just like getting up really early in the morning or staying up very late at night when all the kids are in bed and working on it, like, you know, just like little bit by bit. That's how you get them done. But the ideas, you know, they come from everywhere. Oftentimes it's just me looking at the landscape of the Canadian literature and thinking about what is missing, like what the gaps are, especially in the area of Indigenous lit, and looking at like all the amazing things that a lot of my contemporaries and colleagues and friends are writing. And then thinking about what are we missing here? Like what more can we do here? And then trying to write books that haven't been written before, and maybe genres that haven't been approached before. The Barren Grounds is a good example of that. And just really addressing like important historical issues or contemporary issues. And I think through all of that, helping us all to look forward into what kind of future we want to forge together. Like where do we want to go? And I don't think you really can figure out where you want to go unless you know where you've been and what we're going through today because of it. And so my books, whether they come from, you know, an experience like what my son's been through or whether what my grandmother went to a residential school, you know, whatever it might be, that's what kind of drives all these stories to be written and put into print is like, where are we going together as a community, you know, both Indigenous and non-Indigenous people.
Well, and one of the things that's so cool about your career as well, David, is you're kind of fearless. Like you mentioned, this is your first sports book, and you've done graphic novels, and you've written books of all different kinds and different genres. So whenever you tackle something that's new to you, is there any sort of trepidation going into that process?
There's always a bit of a worry. I mean, you know, you mentioned earlier like the amount of books I've written. I'm always worried about when people are going to get sick of me, you know, but I worry about sometimes switching genres and trying something new, but I also know that it's a part of the growth process. And, you know, for me as a writer, you know, my own personal goals are that I want to always be better. Like I want to continually challenge myself to get better and better at what I do, because the better I get, the more effective the message that I have to convey gets as well. And so I always want to challenge myself. I never want to be stagnant. I always want to try new things, new forms of literature, new genres. And I've always thought that, you know, as much as my books, you know, are aimed to educate other people, it's me who's educating myself first. And if I don't educate myself properly and do the really hard work to what it takes to write a story, then I don't think that people are going to learn as much as I want them to learn either. And so I learn as much as other people when I work on a book. And I work really hard to get to make that happen.
Before we let you go, David, book launch, it's happening this week.
Yeah, it's on Saturday at 7 o'clock at McNally Robinson. And the fun thing about this is that Aiden Werfel, who is a character in the book, The Kodiaks, Alex's best friend in the city, he's actually he's a real life guy, and he's hosting the book launch. So you get to actually meet one of the characters in the book. He'll be hosting the book launch at McNally's on Saturday. So I'm really excited to have Aiden out there. He's one of my son's best friends.
That's cool, David. Well, thank you so much for joining us to tell us about the Kodiaks Home Ice Advantage. Congratulations on the latest book, and congratulations on the belated Governor General's Award. That's outstanding stuff.
Thanks so much, you guys. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
David A. Robertson, the author of The Kodiaks, Home Ice Advantage, his latest novel, which addresses racism in minor hockey through the story of an Indigenous hockey player named Alex. The book emphasizes education, community support, and redefining masculinity to combat discrimination and promote inclusivity in sports.